Hello, Illinois Radio Reader listeners. This is Elizabeth McMahon with the Pantograph for Monday, June 23rd, 2025. And today we have a large spread on the front page of the Pantograph celebrating Pride Month. With there's a large photo of two women sitting under a rainbow, and They're sitting at a booth that says Free Mom Hugs, and the headline reads Celebrating in the Sunshine. The two moms there are Cassandra Collins and Diana Holderby of the Illinois chapter of Free Mom Hugs. Attended the Prairie Pride picnic on yesterday. That's on Sunday, June 22nd. At Anderson Park to show their love and support for members of the LGBTQ plus community who may not feel that affection and acceptance at home. And this story is by D. Jack Alkire, and I'll begin. Diana Holderby joined the Illinois chapter of Free Mom Hugs, a nonprofit organization that supports members of the LGBTQ plus community when their own families do not, in 2017. It's a lot of emotions, Holderby said. As a mother of a person in the community, I just feel strong, very strongly about being supportive and loving and being a visibly safe person to be around. Holderby was joined by three other moms offering love, support, and hugs at Sunday's Prairie Pride Picnic at Anderson Park in Normal. For nearly three decades, the Prairie Pride Coalition has held the picnic to support members of the LGBTQ plus community in the Twin Cities, said Dave Bentlin, president of the coalition. Every year, community partners and allied organizations gather at Anderson Park and serve a free lunch with family-friendly activities like face painting. But it has not always been that way, Bentlin said. It started as a family picnic for folks who were not accepted by their blood relatives. This was back in the mid-1990s when a lot of people didn't feel comfortable going to their family reunion picnics, he said. They didn't feel comfortable being out and being around people who didn't accept them. Such sentiments were not uncommon in McLean County at the time, Bentlin said. So the event was held at the more secluded Underwood Park off the main thoroughfares of Bloomington Normal. That was a park that was kind of off to the side a little more, you know. We didn't have a lot of traffic going by it, and there were people who were still concerned about coming out for events, Bentlin said. But attitudes have changed. I think over time the community has changed, which is good. It's allowed us to do more things in the community without feeling fearful, Bentlin said. Prairie Pride Coalition has several events coming up, including Pride Night at Miller Park Zoo on July 9th, sponsored by the Bloomington and Normal Public Libraries. There's a Pride Night at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival scheduled for July 19th with a special screening of The Importance of Being Earnest. And then there is Pride Fest, scheduled for July 26th. Partners and allies in McLean County and Central Illinois are remaining steadfast, even in the face of increased pressure from today's heated political climate, Bentlin said. I think that when we have hard times, and these are hard times for a lot of people in our community, it does draw us together, he said. Representatives from the Bloomington Police Department were on hand Sunday, as well as those from Illinois State University Police, including Pawfisher Korg, the canine. Boxed lunches from Hy-Vee were provided free of cost to attendants, and Expressions Body Art and Design offered free face painting and body art. Holly Johnson started Expressions in August 2023, in part to be closer to the LGBTQ plus community in McLean County, she said. We get to be a part of it, be in the community, and really just be able to express joy and express pride and inclusion, Johnson said, which is really a huge part of our foundation. Johnson has been attending Pride events for decades, she said, motivated to show support for her brother and his partner in Michigan. I watch them with their challenges, being accepted into the communities and the things that they do, Johnson said. And I've always wanted to just support anybody and everybody. That support can mean a lot to people trying to find their identity or struggling with mental health, said Holderby of the Free Moms Hug Group. Statistics show that the suicide rate goes down with just one supportive person in a person's life that's accepting and supportive, she said. As a mother herself, that is a motivation enough to continue what she does. Again, I can't imagine turning my back on my own child for any reason, let alone this reason. Moving on the front page above the fold, here we have a Middle East-focused story with the headline, U.S. signals a willingness to renew talks with Iran and avoid a prolonged war. And this is an Associated Press story by Mike Pasoli and Josh Boak. The Trump administration on Sunday signaled a willingness to renew talks with Iran and avoid a prolonged war in the aftermath of a surprise attack on three of the country's nuclear sites as U.S. officials assessed Tehran's nuclear ambitions and the threat of retaliation against American interests. President Donald Trump, who had addressed the nation from the White House on Saturday night, allowed his national security team to speak for him the next morning, staying quiet on social media and scheduling no public appearances. The coordinated messaging by his vice president, Pentagon chief, top military advisor, and secretary of state suggested a confidence that any fallout from the attack would be manageable and that Iran's lack of military capabilities would ultimately force it back to the bargaining table. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said at a news conference that America does not seek war with Iran, while Vice President J.D. Vance said the strikes have given Tehran the possibility of returning to negotiate with Washington. Operation Midnight Hammer involved decoys and deception and met with no Iranian resistance, according to Hegseth and Air Force General Dan Kane, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This mission was not and has not been about regime change, Hegseth added. Kane said the goal of the operation, destroying nuclear sites in Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan, had been achieved. Final battle damage will take some time, but initial battle damage assessments indicate that all three sites sustained extremely severe damage and destruction, Kane said. Vance said in a television interview that while he would not discuss sensitive intelligence about what we have seen on the ground, he felt very confident that we've substantially delayed their development of a nuclear weapon. Pressed further, he told NBC's Meet the Press that, "I think we've really pushed their program back by a very long time. I think there's going to be many, many years before the Iranians are able to develop a nuclear weapon." The vice president said the U.S. had negotiated aggressively with Iran to try to find a peaceful settlement and that Trump made his decision after assessing the Iranians were not acting in good faith. "I actually think it provides an opportunity to reset this relationship, reset these negotiations, and get us in a place where Iran can decide not to be a threat to its neighbors, not to be a threat to the United States, and if they're willing to do that, the United States is all ears," Vance said. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said on CBS's Face the Nation that there are no planned military operations right now against Iran unless they mess around and attack U.S. interests. Trump has previously threatened other countries, but often backed down or failed to follow through, given his promises to his coalition of voters not to entangle the United States in an extended war. It was not immediately clear whether Iran saw the avoidance of a wider conflict as in its best interests. Much of the world is absorbing the consequences of the strikes and the risk that they could lead to more fighting across the Middle East after the U.S. inserted itself into the war between Israel and Iran. Airstrikes that began earlier this month by Israel targeted Iran's nuclear facilities and generals, prompting retaliation from Iran and creating a series of events that contributed to the U.S. attack. While U.S. officials urged for caution and stressed that only nuclear sites were targeted by Washington, Iran criticized the actions as a violation of its sovereignty and international law. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, said Washington was fully responsible for whatever actions Tehran may take in response. "They crossed a very big red line by attacking nuclear facilities," he said at a news conference in Turkey. "I don't know how much room is left for diplomacy." China and Russia, where Araghchi was headed, was heading for talks with President Vladimir Putin, condemned the U.S. military action. The attacks were a gross violation of international law, said Russia's foreign ministry, which also advocated returning the situation to a political and diplomatic course. A Turkish foreign ministry statement warned about the risk of the conflict spreading to a global level. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer said the United Kingdom was moving military equipment into the area to protect its interests, people, and allies, but he was focused on finding a solution. Leaders of Italy, Canada, Germany, and France agreed on the need for a rapid resumption of negotiations. France's Emmanuel Macron held talks with the Saudi Crown Prince and Sultan of Oman. Iran could try to stop oil exports through the Strait of Hormuz, which could create the same kind of inflationary shocks that the world felt after Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022. Oil prices have increased in the financial markets as the war between Israel and Iran had intensified, climbing by 21% over the past month. The Pentagon briefing did not provide any new details about Iran's nuclear capabilities. Hegseth said the timeline for the strikes was the result of a schedule set by Trump for talks with Iran about its nuclear ambitions. And moving on the front page, we have a reaction story to the Iran bombing news, and with the headline, Duckworth Durbin React to U.S. Bombing of Iran. And this is also an associated, actually this is by Allison Petty, although I'm not sure if it's by the Associated Press or not. It may be a local story. I'll begin here. Both of Illinois' Democratic U.S. senators expressed dismay over President Donald Trump's decision to bomb three nuclear sites in Iran, aligning with many in their party who said he should have sought congressional approval. The sentiments of U.S. Senators Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth contrasted with those of their Republican counterparts, who largely praised the president for taking decisive action and characterized the decision as necessary. Duckworth, a combat veteran who lost both legs during the Iraq War when a Black Hawk helicopter she was piloting was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade, offered particularly sharp criticism. The Trump administration illegally bombed Iran tonight, putting American troops and citizens at risk of retaliation and threatening to draw us into yet another Middle East war without constitutionally required congressional approval, she said in a statement on Saturday night. I have long said Iran cannot obtain a nuclear weapon, but this goal could and should have been pursued through diplomatic means first. Duckworth said her top priority and Trump's should be the same, ensuring the safety of American troops, personnel, diplomats, and citizens in the region, as well as that of U.S. partners and allies. She called for the administration to come before Congress to discuss its actions. Durbin, meanwhile, noted that Trump had withdrawn the U.S. from the long-term comprehensive nuclear agreement that the country and other world powers had reached with Iran in 2015. The agreement, brokered under President Barack Obama's administration, had limited Tehran's enrichment of uranium in exchange for lifting of economic sanctions. Trump withdrew the U.S. from the arrangement in 2018, calling it the worst deal ever. During his first term, President Trump killed the Iran nuclear deal, which required mandatory inspections, and invited this dangerous situation, Durbin said in a statement on Sunday morning. Iran, without inspectors, appears to have been developing dangerous weapons-grade materials. And now, President Trump's actions in bombing Iran puts the U.S. on the brink of a wider war in the Middle East, all without constitutionally required congressional approval. Our recent experiences in Iraq should be a stark reminder of becoming embroiled in wars in the Middle East. Members of the president's party generally took a different view. Well done, President Trump, said Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, posting on X, the social media site formerly known as Twitter. Alabama Senator Katie Britt called the bombings strong and surgical. The Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman Roger Wicker of Mississippi said Trump made a deliberate and correct decision to eliminate the existential threat posed by the Iranian regime. The quick GOP endorsements of stepped-up U.S. involvement in Iran came after Trump publicly considered the strikes for days, and many congressional Republicans cautiously said they thought he would make the right decision. I'm going to move inside the pantograph on page A2. We have an economy-focused story, specifically on U.S. steel, with the headline, Nikki Baczynski and Steelworkers Demand Investment in Illinois Plant. This is by Austin Hugelet of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm kind of not saying his last name correctly, but I'm going to start the story. U.S. Representative Nikki Baczynski and the local Steelworkers Union are demanding that President Donald Trump and the Japanese firm that just bought U.S. Steel find a way to ensure some of the money from the $14 billion deal makes its way to the struggling steel mill here. And this is actually, the dateline is Granite City. Baczynski, a Democrat from Springfield, told reporters at a press conference on Saturday that in recent years, workers at the Madison County facility have seen hundreds of colleagues laid off and both of their plants' furnaces idled. And she said they had been hurt again this month when Trump approved Nippon Steel's purchase and plans for $11 billion in investments, all in places other than Granite City. They deserve a hell of a lot better than that, said Baczynski, who represents the 13th Congressional District. Jason Chisholm, a United Steelworkers official, said generations of people have relied on the mill to raise their families. Our message moving forward is real simple, he said. Invest in this mill. Invest in Granite City, Illinois. The demands marked the latest effort to try and save an operation that has been a lodestar for the city since its founding and still has 900 people on the books, even in its diminished state. The company has said it will maintain the status quo in Granite City for 2 years, but union leaders want to win back the jobs they've lost and start making steel here again. A U.S. Steel spokesperson did not have any further comment on the record. The White House did not respond to questions by deadline Saturday. There's been reason to doubt the mill's future, regardless of the deal. It's an older coal-fired plant in an industry increasingly moving toward newer, more efficient electric-powered operations. U.S. Steel announced plans in 2022 to phase out steel making, sell off key parts of the operation, and cut hundreds of jobs. But union officials said it was only in 2018 that Trump was on stage here talking about bringing the good times back with new taxes on imports to make it easier to compete with foreign steel. They noted that the deal he cut to allow Nippon to buy U.S. Steel secured for the federal government a golden share, giving the White House a say over the Pittsburgh-based steelmakers' production and trade matters. And Chisholm urged Trump to use it to compel investment in the plant. Union leaders said it needs some $500 million in upgrades to modernize it for the future. I know he knows us here, Chisholm said. Don't forget about us hardworking steelworkers here in Granite City, Illinois. Baczynski said the $500 million isn't that much in the context of the acquisition. I do think that's a very realistic ask, she said. Also on page A2 of the pantograph, we have a story, a more international story here, with the headline, Pope Leo XIV Flags AI Impact on Kids' Intellectual and Spiritual Development. This is an Associated Press story by Nicole Winfield. Pope Leo XIV warned Friday that artificial intelligence could negatively impact the intellectual, neurological, and spiritual development of young people as he pressed one of the priorities of his young pontificate. History's first American pope sent a message to a conference of AI and ethics, part of which was taking place in the Vatican, in a sign of the Holy See's concern for the new technologies and what they mean for humanity. In the message, Leo said any further development of AI must be evaluated according to the superior ethical criterion of the need to safeguard the dignity of each human being while respecting the diversity of the world's population. He warned specifically that new generations are most at risk given they have never had such quick access to information. All of us, I'm sure, are concerned for children and young people and the possible consequences of the use of AI on their intellectual and neurological development, he said in the message. Society's well-being depends on their being given the ability to develop their God-given gifts and capabilities and not allow them to confuse mere access to data with intelligence. In the end, authentic wisdom has more to do with recognizing the true meaning of life than with the availability of data, he said. Leo, who was elected in May after the death of Pope Francis, identified AI as one of the most critical matters facing humanity, saying it poses challenges to defending human dignity, justice, and labor. He explains his concerns for AI by invoking his namesake, Pope Leo XIII. That Leo was Pope during the dawn of the Industrial Revolution and made the plight of workers and the need to guarantee their rights and dignity a key priority. Toward the end of his pontificate, Francis became increasingly vocal about the threats to humanity posed by AI and called for an international treaty to regulate it. Francis said politicians must take the lead in making sure AI remains human-centric so that decisions about when to use weapons or even less lethal tools always remain made by humans and not machines. In state news, we have more of that on page A3, local and state news. We have a Chicago Tribune article here by Angie Leventis with the headline, New Illinois Clinic Provides All Trimester Abortions Up to Roughly 34 Weeks in Pregnancy. A new Chicago clinic is providing abortions to patients up to roughly 34 weeks into pregnancy, the only standalone clinic in the Midwest to offer often controversial terminations in the third trimester and among only a handful that do so nationwide. Hope Clinic, a longtime abortion provider in southern Illinois, opened a second location in the Uptown neighborhood June 2nd, advertising all trimester abortions. Hope Clinic is now open in Illinois, expanding our care through all trimesters, and OMG, we couldn't be more excited, the clinic's Instagram page announced. Everyone deserves access to abortion care whenever they need it, because deciding and acting on what's best for you shouldn't be on anyone else's timeline. Clinic officials say abortions performed there, including those in the late second trimester and third trimester, will comply with the 2019 Illinois Reproductive Health Act, which allows terminations up to fetal viability when a fetus has a significant likelihood of survival outside the womb without extraordinary medical measures. After that point, an abortion can only be performed to protect the life or health of the pregnant person, according to the law's exemptions. But the clinic intends to offer patients as much access to abortion as possible within the bounds of those regulations, said Dr. Aaron King, Hope Clinic Chief Medical Officer. I want people to know that we are absolutely following the law, but that we make a really careful determination, she said, and we want to provide access to as many people as we can within the law. As the third anniversary of the end of Roe v. Wade approaches, a new local clinic specializing in abortion services later in pregnancy underscores the extreme polarization in reproductive health laws from state to state, a disparity that continues to grow nationwide. Since the U.S. Supreme Court's June 24, 2022 decision to overturn federal abortion rights, many conservative states have all but banned terminating a pregnancy except in the narrowest of circumstances, often involving health or life emergencies. Even in endangerment cases, there is no national consensus. The day after Hope Clinic Chicago opened, the Trump administration announced it would be revoking a guidance directing hospitals to terminate pregnancies during medical emergencies. Those guidelines were an attempt by the Biden administration to preserve some access in states with bans on the procedure, particularly in cases where pregnant patients faced organ loss or severe hemorrhaging, among other potentially grave complications. At the same time, more liberal states, including Illinois, have in the past few years eliminated many of the legal obstacles to abortion access, often in direct response to mounting constraints on reproductive rights in other parts of the country. The one major restriction remaining in Illinois is a limit on terminations past fetal viability, which is generally considered somewhere around 24 to 28 weeks in pregnancy, though the law cites no specific gestational age. After viability, an abortion can be performed if the pregnant person's life or health is at risk, including mental health conditions. Abortion opponents decried the arrival of Hope Clinic Chicago. Eric Scheidler, executive director of the Chicago-based Pro-Life Action League, said while abortion at any point is unconscionable, terminations later in pregnancy are particularly abhorrent. Almost everyone recognizes the brutality of an abortion that late in pregnancy, he said. I think it's a common ground area we have with a lot of people. As alarming as it is for someone like me who cares about fetal life, life in the womb, and who cares about the fate of women who participate in the demise of their child, on another level, I appreciate the honesty and openness because it allows us to have a frank conversation about what late-term abortion really is. A Gallup poll in 2023 found that support for legal abortion drops later in pregnancy. More than two-thirds of Americans said ending a pregnancy should be legal in the first trimester, but only 37% supported legal abortions in the second trimester. Less than a quarter of respondents favored legal terminations in the third trimester. The overarching issue is that Illinois law is intentionally vague, said Mary Kate Zander, president of Illinois Right to Life. Illinois state legislators don't want to say that third trimester abortion is legal in Illinois, but the reality is elected leaders want women to be able to come to Illinois in the third trimester and get an abortion. The clinic has the support of Illinois Attorney General and Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration, which has vowed to make Illinois a reproductive rights haven. Attorney General Kwame Raoul said that Illinois law recognizes the fundamental right to abortion and affirms that decisions about abortion, as with any health care, are between a patient and their medical provider in accordance with the provider's professional judgment and standards of care. He added that fetal viability is determined on a case-by-case basis. Illinois law permits abortion care after a determination of fetal viability if, in the professional judgment of the provider, such care is necessary to protect the life or health of the pregnant patient, he said in a statement to the Tribune. My office has fought to secure Illinois as an oasis for safe and effective reproduction or effective abortion access. I welcome and will work to protect the providers who provide safe and lawful health care to any patient seeking care here. Hope Clinic Chicago will be an additional resource to much-needed critical reproductive health care in the region. Melissa Kula, spokesman for the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, said in an email, "The state continues to prioritize access to comprehensive reproductive and maternal health care services, including supporting abortion providers," she said. And finally, here in state news, we have a headline on a TV show here. We have, it reads, "Detective from Naperville competes on new Fox reality TV show." This is by Tess Kenny of the Naperville Sun. Derek North has long harbored unfinished business on the television screen. Now he's seeing those aspirations through one nationally aired episode at a time. North, a Naperville resident and detective with the Downers Grove Police Department, is a contestant on The Snake, a new Fox TV reality competition show. Hosted by comedian Jim Jeffries, the series is a test of social survival, the network says. "Man, it was wild," North said in an interview. "It was wild." The cornerstone of the series is that instead of eliminating contestants like your typical competition show, who stays and who goes is determined through something called a saving ceremony, where contestants save one another until one person is left unpicked and goes home. The idea is contestants need to work to win each other's favor to stay in the game. The catch? The cast is composed of contestants who work in various persuasive professions. Contestants include an ex-con, a pastor, a lawyer, a poker player, and Naperville's own North. The Snake premiered June 10th with 15 contestants. North successfully made it through the first saving ceremony and was poised to return to screens this week. New episodes air at 8 p.m. Tuesdays and are available to stream on Hulu. North, who spoke last week while sitting down for coffee in downtown Naperville, couldn't say how he fared in the competition overall, but called the experience incredible. "It's also been a long time coming," he said. He grew up in 45 minutes south of Naperville in Manhattan, went to school in New Lenox and college in Indiana, where he majored in media arts production and minored in theater. And I'm going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph in shortly. Please stay tuned.